Welcome back, listeners, to the David Crit Podcast. My name is Krista Swanepoel, and this very special edition of the podcast marks the first episode of a series of episodes featuring artists from the all-female printmaking collective known as the Printing Girls. Each episode of this series will feature one of the artists from this collective. This group of professional South African-based artists is a platform exclusively for women printmakers to share ideas and skills, network, and exhibit together. I'm delighted to introduce this episode's featured guest, Free State-based artist Lorene Keane-Bortma. Welcome to the podcast, Lorene. Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello, Krista. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Hello, everyone. My name is Lorene Keane-Bortma. I'm a researcher, artist, and lecturer based in the Free State in Bloemfontein. My main medium that I work with, surprise, surprise, is printmaking, hence I'm part of the Printing Girl. And I lecture in printmaking as well here, but I also delve into traditional drawing and digital drawings in my art practice. Recently, I've really fallen in love with the medium of stone lithography, so that's mostly what my body of work entails at this stage.
I'm really excited to ask you a bit about stone lithography later, but could you tell me a little bit about your journey and what led you to pursue art?
Wow, that's a question I obviously, as an artist, that's something that you get asked, and I'm never sure how to answer it really. It feels like I fell into it, but I didn't. I was always interested in art as a child. I grew up in Kimberley in the Northern Cape, which is not very, but it's quite a small town, which is, I think, mostly the case for artists. I don't know, but I was a bit of an outsider, and I found a lot of respite in drawing or making art. I did take art as a subject in school, and I really loved it, but my parents, as it usually goes, wasn't as interested in me pursuing a career in art. My brother did architecture, so my parents were really pushing me to try that out rather, because they were thinking, you know, it's a medium or a discipline that is still creative and visually stimulating, create new things, but there's a bit of a more, I don't know, guarantee in their view for work or an income. Luckily, I was not accepted for architecture. And it then just worked out that my high school art teacher contacted my parents saying that, am I not maybe interested in art? There's an opportunity for me to study art in the Free State. And then my parents saw it as a sign. And from there on out, I've been at the Department of Fine Arts at the University of the Free State, and I'm very happy I was not accepted into the architecture program.
On these podcasts, we ask artists about their journey into art and discovering art, and they're always like, oh no, it's boring, it's the same as everyone else's, but it's always a unique little story, and it's cool to ask these questions. To anyone familiar with you as an artist in your practice, especially the fine arts students at the university where you teach, your name is quite synonymous with printmaking. At which point in your life did printmaking make its initial mark on you?
That's a fun question to answer. I remember in high school, we did actually have printmaking at the art center where I took my art as a subject, but I actually did sculpture. I can't remember why I didn't do printmaking. I was interested, but I think it was like my friends were in the sculpture medium, so I went where my friends were. But the whole world just flourished and opened up the moment I started studying at the university, entering the space. I mean, our department isn't as big, but we do have like an etching press, we have a litho press, and we have a silkscreen press and a dark room, and we have all those facilities, albeit on a smaller scale. Once I started actually pursuing and working in the different schools of printmaking, like in my first year, it was this whole world. Because in high school, I only saw relief printing. And then we did etch. We did zinc etches in my first year. And we obviously silkscreen as well. It was actually the silkscreen that really piqued my interest at first. So in my undergraduate degree, I mostly worked with silkscreen and digital painting or digital drawing at the end. I just loved that medium. It's so interesting what you can do with it and the potential for layering. And I don't necessarily agree with the idea that, okay, you're a bit more messy, so you're more like a painter. But I must say that the discipline of printmaking and the practice of it and how it is very system-based, rule-based, kind of clean, everything has its place, that really appealed to me because I do suffer from a lot of anxiety. I think as a student or as now as an artist, there's parameters within the medium I can control. I can work in a clean, cleared out space. And I think that really is very soothing for me, that kind of repeated practice, kind of like a ritual, that tradition. I think that's not something I was aware of initially, but I think that's something that really drew me to the medium, definitely.
What would you say, more on a thematic and conceptual level, are the themes and concepts that define your artistic practice?
I always think about this when I hear conversations with artists, and it's such a loaded question because your practice is so much. There's so much you can unpack. I recently finished my master's degree, and it was this whole dissertation. It was all of this intricacies, and everything has a reason, and there's all this research behind it. But then the beautiful thing for me as well is you can kind of sum up your practice also in a few sentences, and it like encompasses all those other topics that you do investigate. Maybe I should start with my undergraduate degree. The brother I mentioned at the beginning who was studying architecture, we lived together. We were very close. He studied also in Bloemfontein, but unfortunately in my third year, he passed away in a motorcycle accident. Obviously that was a very traumatic experience, and that was kind of the catalyst that shifted my interest in terms of research. That was the kind of defining moment that influenced my art practice and my art making from there on forward. With that said, my art practice revolves around the investigation of grief, mourning, and loss, with a focus on loss. But then also what I recently have investigated is the contemporary means of commemorating the deceased. Because like the traditional forms of commemorating the deceased is very much linked with religion. People, not everyone, but there are a lot of people today who aren't conforming to a specific religion who find a loss when it comes to commemorating the deceased. There's an absence, and that the absence is reiterated. Like there's an absence of the person, then there's an absence of a ritual to commemorate the person. I started looking at, how do we use technology specifically to mourn? How do we use technology to commemorate? That linked up with my brother's interest in video games, because that was my outlet initially, to commemorate playing games or make avatars that look like him and things like that. So that's been my recent interest. And well, I would say the past few years, from this year, I've really also started investigating loss in terms of the body. Not necessarily loss and grief, but just the experience of loss in a visceral way, how it links with the body. And that can be many things. So yeah, that's where I link that. That's like the trajectory, that's the flow of the train of ideas. Since my undergrad, I've used hands a lot in my work, specifically from the perspective of your eyes, the first person point of view. That's something that's been linking all the way through. I just continue using hands because hands is this... it's a very interesting thing for me to draw, but it's also, that's the main thing. You also gain information. It's tangible. To me, it has to do with absence. For me, loss of the body is also like there's the hands, but the body is also cut off, kind of to engage the viewer. So yeah, that's most recently what I've been investigating.
You sent us a magnificent stone lithograph print, which is currently on exhibition in the Parkwood Gallery. This lithograph, I think, really summarizes all of the motifs that you just spoke of. The first thing you notice are the hands. It's quite a large print as well for a lithograph, which is rare, but I want to ask you about lithography soon. But first, I have a question about your title. It's a very curious title. The punctuation is quite deliberate. For our listeners on Spotify, I will link down below so that you can see this artwork that we're discussing. It's called Verwag Hiervoor, Screening Presence. You've also combined Afrikaans and English in this, and it seems to indicate quite a richly layered narrative. What can you tell me about the title?
This lithograph was quite an endeavor to print, but we'll get to that when we speak about the medium itself. But this particular print was actually as a response or collaboration with a poet called Sien Bolders. It was also as part of a project called the Skryverswerf, which was part of the Free State Arts Festival, where I think it was a year-long project where they were working with writers and poets and artists of the written word throughout the year with mentors, and it was specific artists hailing from former Dutch colonies or countries that has to do with the Dutch language, of which South Africa is also included because of Afrikaans and South Africa's history. They then opened it up for artists to collaborate with some of the writers. And I ended up with Sim Bolders. And it's a specific response to one of her poems, but it's quite short. And the Verwag Hiervoor, which is now Afrikaans, it's the first time I've actually used Afrikaans in the title of, in one of my artworks, is taken from the poem that she's written. That poem has to do with being away from one's family. It's also in perspective, I think, of a parent and a child. And she was talking about migrant workers as well. But what I also picked up from it is that loss, a loss of the person, an absence of someone, someone who's far away, and how their voice is being mediated through technology, how their voice is being carried. There's a part of the poem, it's not, I'll say it in English rather, but it's obviously not in written in Afrikaans, it was written in Dutch. It's said somewhere like, the radio waves carry her voice. And that to me was so striking, this idea of our voices and our images being translated or being mediated through technology. And it's like a means or an attempt to try and connect with one another. But this attempted connection is never entirely the same as the visceral, like the bodily experience of being in someone's presence, because there's something different. Like people also compare it to art making. If you learn, like art students, if you learn about an artwork of a contemporary artist throughout history, whatever, but then when you get the chance to stand in front of it, there's something that really just comes out that you can't recreate by looking at a reproduction or a projected image. The same with experiencing a person. You can't replicate that experience through technology. We can try our best. I mean, there are many ways, and we've come very far, like how technology has developed, and the way that we can connect with one another now is so incredibly easy. But there's still an absence, there's still a loss. And that's what I was mostly investigating in that work as a response to the poem, that loss being experienced, that absence, that kind of seeking or looking for someone who's far away and they're not tangible. All you have is like waves and towers, and the composition is these hands. I actually took photographs of my hands like pressing onto flat surfaces, like suggesting a screen. And then the hands are positioned in front of this vast landscape, which is actually a photograph I took in Masada in Israel. This idea of something being kind of desolate and empty. I imposed suggestions of towers or Wi-Fi signals or radio waves. That's the attempt at a bridge in my experience. And the medium of lithography is just so stunning, the way that you can make marks. So there's the smoky feeling that the work has.
So I can tell both you and I have been itching to talk about stone lithography. Your work is the only work in this entire exhibition that's a stone lithograph. Seeing stone lithographs, as I understand it, in contemporary exhibitions is becoming increasingly rarer. Could you tell me a bit about this and about your practice creating stone lithographs?
Yes, it would be my pleasure. So I know it is a medium that's very rare because of all the equipment needed in order to make it. Labor involved, it's extremely laborious, but also the stones that are so rare, especially of that size. I do know those, that big size. I think that the print is 80 by 68 centimeters or something like that. Those stones are tremendously rare. I am in a very favorable, honorable position to have access to the stones here at the department, but the medium was actually a bit in stasis for a long time. I just want to mention that while you were studying, for example, and while I was studying, stone lithography wasn't presented. The department didn't have stone lithography being presented for quite a few years. And as a student, I wasn't introduced to it. And you yourself were also not introduced to the medium as a student. But we recently revitalized the studios and revamped the whole space to be able to accommodate the stones. It took a few years because, as I said, I wasn't formally trained. I kind of trained myself through books because I had the equipment. Thank goodness, in a way, for COVID, because a lot of lecturers in the US had to upload YouTube videos on how to do lithography, which helped me a lot. Also, getting some advice from our previous HOD, who was the previous printmaking lecturer here, Mr. Ben Bortma. So the medium is very intense. I presented only to third year students, and that's also because the stones are so valuable. I'm not sure how the practice is in the other universities, but I believe it's also mostly plate lithography and stone lithography to those specifically interested. But I find that there's something quite magical printing literally from a stone. When I started delving into the medium and learning, teaching myself and learning from my experiences of making so many stones that failed, I really fell in love with it. Such a stunning, beautiful medium. Like, you get the same thing from a plate, that's true. And the plate's much easier to move around, although I haven't done plate lithography yet. It's beautiful. I just find it so magical. Printmaking is very like system, like we talked about. It's like the process, but the process makes sense. Even though you learn silkscreen for the first time, you're a bit confused by it. Oh my goodness, how does this work? Okay. But as soon as you do, it's like, oh, okay, cool. Because it's quite mechanical. You're the printer. It's not a machine. It's just you. But with lithography, even though it can be explained, obviously, through science, there's just a magical quality that the stones possess, because it's still, to me, so stunningly beautiful that you can literally draw something onto a stone. I have one behind me. draw something on a stone and you get that image out. It's beautiful. So onto the size of the stone, we have about four stones that are that size. I think they're about 90 by 70 centimeters. Our press was apparently built so that they can print those big stones. But upon printing one for the first time ever on that press, which is this artwork, It didn't fit. So it was a bit of a mission. It fits on the bed of the press, but when you take it through the press, the scraper stops. The bed of the press stops while it's still in the image area of the print. It was trial and error, and thank goodness I had an assistant helping me with the day or arduous process. It's great to be able to work on that size, and that's something that is very rare, to be able to work on that size as well.
That's really amazing, because when I saw the size of it, I looked and I saw it was a stone lithograph in the description. And I was so impressed, because I don't think I've ever seen a stone lithograph that size before in real life. I was very excited when I learned your work will be featured in this current group exhibition titled Things That Live and Move. For our listeners who are not yet aware, this exhibition is currently at the David Crit Blue House in Parkwood and features a wide variety of prints from members of the Printing Girls Collective. Lorene, can you tell me about the history of your involvement with this group?
Yes, gladly. I only joined the Printing Girls last year in 2021. I'm so happy to be able to be a part of this group. I think the numbers have grown substantially in the last few years. I think it started quite small. It definitely started quite small. It was actually Claudia Rivet-Karnak from Chocolate Ink Studios who reached out to me, I think over Instagram, and she said, would you be interested in applying for this collective? And I'm very grateful to her who reached out, because the opportunities that I've been granted through this collective has been incredible, including this exhibition. I mean, as we all do, really wish and hope there's goals for you as an artist. I'd like to achieve this and this and this. And this was one of mine. Like, I'd really love to be able to exhibit at somewhere at David Crit. So that box has been ticked. That's wonderful. It's really organized well. I think we've grown so much. We're quite a large collective, but it's a very supportive group. And I've really learned a tremendous amount from these women. Everyone from all over. We like have separate groups where you can give information, or if you're struggling with something, you can ask a question, and then everyone's so willing to help and send feedback. It's wonderful. Like, even the other printmakers, like Claudia, sometimes would test something out in her studio for you and let you know, okay, maybe you should wet your paper more. I really feel that this collective has done something very important in, I think, growing awareness for printmaking, obviously, but also really building on this community of printmakers. Building on what you can learn, what everyone has learned, and connecting people. I am in the Free State, I'm in Bloemfontein. And yes, I try to exhibit in Johannesburg and Cape Town and all those other spaces, but it is quite difficult because I'm not there physically. this collective has really opened up the opportunity for me to apply to be part of group exhibitions, especially with my prints. And it's really motivated me to make more prints, which is awesome. As an academic and a lecturer, there's a lot you have to divide your time into, and research is part of it, but sometimes there's usually like student needs and things, and then administrative needs gobble up a bit of time. But because of this collective, I had these deadlines. I'm going for a show here, and we're making a work for a show at David Crit. So there's these motivation and timelines. And obviously, with the call for the David Crit exhibition, I remember Amy Jane writing down that we should try to go bigger, because usually the format is quite small. She's like, bigger the better, you can go for it. And it's like, you know what, I'm going to try making a big stone. And that's motivated me to make a print on these huge stones, which is the first time, I don't know in how long, we've made a print on a big stone. I'm just really grateful. From the outside, the collective is fantastic and it's helping me grow and it's doing great things for artists and printmakers, especially obviously female printmakers, but then also internally, it's motivating me to grow and grow my practice. So it's fantastic.
That's so amazing to hear. I could only imagine that that's motivating to be able to work with other people with the same interests in you, but also the differences between the artists, the sharing of knowledge and the contribution of wisdom and trial and error. I think there's a lot of potential because not everyone has access to the same printmaking equipment. For example, you have access to these beautiful stones and you can share some of that knowledge with the other women in the group who might never have access to that. And now they have this access and it's much better than a YouTube video because they can ask you questions and you can respond and you can troubleshoot together. That's really amazing. Looking forward to seeing what else comes out of your studio. Really hoping to see some more lithographs. I'm sure by now many of our listeners are very curious to see your work. Do you have a website or social media platform where we can interact with you and see more of your portfolio?
Yes, of course. And I just also want to thank you, Krista. This is a wonderful opportunity. I'm so happy to be able to talk about printmaking and talk about the collective and this exhibition, of course, which is a stunning exhibition. It's a stunning show. Thank you for the opportunity. It's just so much fun. I want to keep talking for hours. I do have Instagram and I have a website. My name and surname is a bit complicated to spell. It's LYRENEKUHN. That's my name and surname. My website is www.lorenekeen.co.za. And I'm on Instagram. I think if you just search Loreen Keen Botma, you'll find me. But my tag is Loreen_Keen Botma. LYRENE_KUHNBOTMA. No H. Yes, that's me. You can find me there.
All right, great. I'm going to link those below in the description, as well as the image of your gorgeous artwork that is in this exhibition. This has been a really enlightening conversation, Loreen. Thank you so much. I just want to know what lies ahead for you. Is there anything that you're working on that we can keep tabs with?
I really hope so. I'm definitely making more prints and I'm focusing on stone lithography specifically. There's nothing lined up just yet. I'm hoping to try and get some residencies in the future and just get my work out there a bit more and represented in different galleries. Thank you.
Really excited to see it. Thank you so much for joining us on this podcast, Loreen. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into this very special episode. Visit the description below to find links and find out more about what we chatted about today. And join us again for the next episode of this series.